that been excited to be here and for this week, and it's really going fast. But I thank you guys for letting me be a part of this. So our co-host or co-instructor, or that's going to be doing it, excuse me, is Duncan Larson, and she is NOMC certified. Let me, what is going on with my computer? Hang on for a second.
We started the recording, so it might have given you alert about that.
Okay, yeah, because it's sort of. Okay. Oh gosh. Okay. But Duncan is she works with the Older Blind Program in Colorado Center, and she's been working with ONM and for over 30 years, teaching kids and adults of all ages. And so, Duncan, there you go.
Thank you so much, Winford, and thank you for inviting me to talk about this. I have been teaching cane travel for a number of years to people of all ages. And the topics that I'm going to cover today include crossing streets in all different situations, also shorelining curbs and sidewalks. So I'd like to start with shorelining. We're talking about, I think maybe you talked about shorelining inside, but I'm going to talk about shorelining out of doors first. So shorelining,
Duncan, this is Judy. I don't think we've
go
talked
ahead.
about shoreline. I don't
Okay,
think we've
then
talked about
I'm
shoreline.
going to explain it because it is a technique that can be used either inside or outside. So shorelining, very simply, is a cane technique that you can use to for a specific reason. So indoors, if you're walking along a hallway, you can use this technique to find a doorway going into an office, for example, or a doorway for an elevator. Outside, you can use this technique to locate intersecting sidewalks, going to people's homes, or intersecting sidewalks, at corners, also intersecting driveways. And so you're thinking, well, what is this technique? So it is, I think you've already talked about cane technique, that you have an arc. You use your cane in an arc in front of you that is a little wider than your shoulders, that you're swinging your cane back and forth a little wider than your shoulders. Well, in this case, if you're looking for something specific, you would shoreline and make your arc wider on one side. So let's say you're walking down a hallway and you want to find the next office, and you know there's probably not going to be much noise coming from that office. So you want to shoreline the hall, which means you're going to be walking along, and if the office is on the right, you're going to increase your arc on the right, and you're going to increase it, and you're going to be very consistent with it until you feel your cane swinging wider, and so then you'll know you're at that office door. The same thing can be done if you're walking along and you're outside, for example, and you're looking for an intersecting sidewalk. Let's say you know your friend lives along a street and they are the second their doorway to their house is going to be the second sidewalk on the left. So you'd walk along. In this case, you would widen your arc on the left. You would go past that first sidewalk and then go to the second sidewalk and know that you've found the sidewalk that goes up to their house. The thing about shorelining is that it is a really great technique when you're looking for something specific, like the things I've mentioned. It is not a good technique to use all the time. And this is sometimes why we are a little hesitant to show people shorelining techniques when they first learn, like in their first week or two at our center, because there is a temptation to use shorelining all the time. Before a person develops a lot of confidence in the use of their cane, they may want to walk along a sidewalk outside and be shorelining it the whole time and continually shoreline the grass line so that they stay on the sidewalk. So I have a couple comments about doing that. First of all, it isn't necessary. And secondly, it undermines your capacity to develop confidence in your cane. If you are constantly shorelining inside or outside, you're not going to develop that real confidence in the information your cane can give you that we want everybody to have. You know, I want all of my students to be completely confident in the information their cane's going to give them, and they don't need to be shorelining all the time. So again, use that technique of increasing your arc on one side or the other to find something specific. And mostly the things I can think of are looking for an intersecting sidewalk, an intersecting driveway, a specific doorway inside. You can also use it outside if you're looking for a business. Let's say you know that you're downtown and you know that the business you're looking for is close to the center of the block. You can walk to where you think is close to the center of the block and then go over toward the buildings and shoreline the building. Now, of course, with finding businesses, you can also listen for people going in and out of the doors, depending upon how busy that business is. There are other ways to find businesses. So, again, it's not a good technique to shoreline all the way down to the middle of the block. It's good to go over when you think you're close to the doorway of the building. So generally, if I see people shorelining all the time, I will ask them to stop doing it because of all the reasons that I just stated. Let's see. So let's start talking about crossing streets. So you may not believe me, but the easiest streets to cross are going to be the ones that are lighted intersections with quite a bit of traffic. That generally isn't where we start with new students. We start with residential crossings where there's very little traffic, and that is simply because a person probably hasn't developed very much confidence about traveling and walking along traffic. So what I would do is work with a student to cross at a residential street. And when you do crossings, you bring into play all the things that I think you've already talked about, including sun cues and traffic sounds and so on. I like to have people start crossing a residential street that is right in front of them so that they come to a curb and they don't have to change direction to get lined up to cross and do that type of crossing first to get some confidence in street crossings. Of course, when you come to a residential street, you want to locate the curb. If you're doing the type of crossing that I'm talking about, you would already be going whatever direction. Let's say you're walking south along the sidewalk. You'd come up to a curb. You'd certainly acknowledge that the curb was there and stop and listen for traffic. Now, a lot of residential streets are not going to have stop signs, so you do need to listen for traffic. Hopefully, there won't be much traffic on a street like that. If you do not hear traffic, it's okay to go ahead and go. The first street crossings I like to do with new students are two-way traffic, not one-way, but two-way traffic and two lanes. So it's not a very long street crossing. And while you're crossing, you want to pay attention to your sun. So let's say you are walking south and it's in the morning and you can kind of feel the sun off on your left side. Keep this, if you feel it on your face or your shoulder, keep the sun in the same place while you're making the crossing. One of the biggest challenges for new traveler is putting all the pieces together. You're paying attention to your cane technique, you're paying attention to the cardinal direction you're going, you're paying attention to the sun cue, and you're paying attention to traffic. Sometimes with these residential crossings, you can hear traffic off in the distance some. Maybe it's a block away, and if it's a busy street a block away, you're going to be able to hear it. Again, you can use that as a cue. Let's say your traffic is off to one side. You want to make sure if you're walking straight ahead that you keep it at that same side. If you turn by accident, you would know it by listening for the traffic. And I guess what I should do at this point is talk about what I mean by parallel traffic and perpendicular traffic. So I'm going to be getting into that. So when I talk about parallel traffic, I mean that it's the traffic that is going the same direction I'm going. If I'm going walking south across an intersection, then parallel traffic would be going south and north next to me. Okay. Perpendicular traffic is the traffic that's going in front of me. It's going along the street that I'm crossing. So in that case, it would be the traffic going east and west. So we pay a lot of attention to traffic. Sometimes you can hear perpendicular traffic, you know, half a block or a block ahead of you. Sometimes you can hear parallel traffic a block away from you. If it's busy enough, you can use that as a cue for crossing unlighted and intersections without stop signs. Okay. So let's talk about crossing streets with stop signs. And let me back up for a minute and say that if you're out walking and you're getting ready to cross an intersection, if it's a new intersection, there's so many things you're going to be able to tell on your own about the intersection. You can listen for traffic. You can tell whether it's a one-way or two-way traffic in front of you. You can listen for how wide you think the crossing is, like how many lanes are you going to need to cross? So that's really important to get that information in your mind before you're crossing a new intersection. If you're crossing an intersection where there's a stop sign, you know, if the stop sign is right next to you, you can listen for traffic coming up to it and going. And if they go straight across and you also want to cross going straight across, if they're your parallel traffic and they go, then you know that you can go at that same time. Sometimes you may come to an intersection where there is a stop sign in front of you for the traffic that is your perpendicular traffic. And you can also listen for that traffic stopping. When it stops, then you know that you can go. And it does take some confidence to feel comfortable going ahead and stepping in front of a car that's stopped. But if they have a stop sign, they are supposed to stop, and you can go ahead and, well, you would want to listen to traffic going all directions, but making that judgment to go ahead and cross. Let's talk about crossing streets with traffic lights. So again, you can walk up to a busy street, and I'll talk in a minute about finding curbs and finding curb cuts. But just the crossing itself, you walk up to the street and you're going to want to listen for the traffic. Let's say your parallel traffic is on your left side and it's going, let's say it is going north and south. Your perpendicular traffic is in front of you and we'll say it's going east and west. So I like to tell my students that if they're unsure about a crossing, it's better to wait for a cycle to make sure that they're crossing at the right time. Walking up to an intersection, listening to that traffic will tell you how wide the street is. Is it two lanes? Is it four lanes? Is it six lanes? Is it eight lanes? You know, some of the streets are very, very, very busy now. And so determining the width of the crossing, you can also listen to how long do I have to cross? And by that, you would hear your parallel traffic next to you. When you hear the surge of traffic starting up, you're going to know that that's the beginning of the time that you could go ahead and cross the street. Again, if it's a new intersection, listen for how long is that? Sometimes it's not really long enough. And then you're going to want to find the traffic signal that and push the pedestrian button. So often that will give you a little more time to get across.
Say, Duncan, this is Judy, and I have a thought.
Okay.
Sometimes, you're right, I listen for the traffic to change, and I know that the traffic on my left or right, whatever it is, has started to go.
Uh-huh.
One of the things that I want to be sure is that the first car does whatever it's going to do, because the other thing that can happen is someone can turn right on a red light.
That's exactly right. Someone can turn right on a red light, and there could be more than one turning right on a red light. When I was in training, I had a street to cross where there were multiple cars turning right. And it scared me at first. And then I realized, you know, I'm just going to have to go ahead and cross when the car goes. And let's clarify that. These cars now turn right on red. So you don't want that to be your cue about when to cross. You're going to want to listen for traffic going parallel or straight ahead, not necessarily turning to the right. What I finally had to do was just say, okay, if I'm going to get across this street, I'm just going to have to go. And even though there were lots of right-hand turners, it was my time to go with parallel traffic. This is me in training under sleep shades. And, you know, they stopped and waited for me. So...
This is Liz. I have a suggestion. One thing, when I'm waiting at the curb, I have my cane held up vertical. Mm-hmm. But then when I am ready to cross, especially if I'm kind of concerned, like, oh, is there going to be another person turning right on red that I won't notice? I'll put my cane out in front of me and maybe move it back and forth once, kind of before I begin walking, just to indicate that I'm about to move in case drivers are not sure what's going on. So that could be a technique you could try.
Yeah. I think that's really good. That's a good point as far as waiting at the curb as well. You don't want to have your cane out in the traffic. I've had students have their cane run over. You don't want to be at a busy intersection, have your cane run over and end up with a 2 foot long cane or something. So keeping your cane upright. And then I like your technique, Liz, of really signaling to traffic that you're going to go across. So again, listening for parallel traffic, the traffic that's going parallel and not turning is going to be your cue for crossing. Now, there are going to be some streets you come to where there isn't going to be a lot of parallel traffic, and there's going to be more perpendicular traffic. That's a little harder to listen for, but you can certainly listen for traffic that's in front of you that has stopped. And in that case, that would be your cue to go when they stop. And I do want to mention something about making crossings with traffic lights when there's quite a bit of traffic. You're going to be crossing and you're going to be going in front of cars that are waiting, because for them, it's a red light. So they're waiting, you're crossing. Most of the time, you want to go in front of them. I have seen students kind of weave in and out of stalled traffic, you know, traffic that's waiting for a red light. And that's a very dangerous thing to do because not all cars can see you then. So you're going to want to stay in the crosswalk, be in front of cars. Now the thing that could possibly happen, rarely happens, but could happen, is that there is a car that has gone clear into the crosswalk and is stopped, and you'd have to almost go into your parallel traffic to go around them. That's a tricky situation. I haven't seen that happen very much, but it could happen, in which case, you know, you want to be really careful about and make a decision about whether you're going to go in front of or behind that car. And of course, a lot of it depends on how many lanes is it? How many lanes of traffic are waiting for that red light?
I'd like to say something with that.
So, sure.
Yeah, and that's very true that you don't want to go behind them. Sometimes what will happen is you try to go behind them and they realize that they're in your way. And so as you're going to go behind them, they now start backing up. So that puts you between two cars. There's situations where if they do go way over the crosswalk, to go around them at this point, I have my students do this. If that happens, when you make contact with that vehicle, you're going to like do a serious hug shoreline. You're going to go literally right across the front of it. Mm-hmm. And then once you come around to the side of it, go back in just a little bit and continue your crossing. And I like the idea. I hold my cane in a pencil grip with it extended up about 3 or 4 inches with the tip in the street, you know? And like you said, Duncan, sometimes there's lots of right turning traffic. So at some point it's like, okay, I'm going to have to go. So when that first guy starts moving, you put your cane out and move it a little bit, but you also give a quick little head face contact to the driver that's coming up next to see that, hey, you see me, I'm moving, and give them that heads up. Mm-hmm. That you're going to start crossing. So those are things I do.
And that gives you a lot more control over the situation as well. Yeah, I really like that. And I do have something to say about what Winford said about if you are going in front of a car that's somewhat in the crosswalk and you do kind of a really close shoreline, that's exactly right. That's what you have to do to go in front of that car. Don't be afraid to touch the car with your cane. You need to do that. It's not going to hurt their car. And certainly you don't even need to be worried about whether you're going to hurt their car. They should not be in the crosswalk. So let's back up a little bit and talk about finding curbs and finding curb cuts. So for most residential streets, you're going to be able to walk up to the street and find a curb. Your cane, if you're using your cane correctly, your cane is going to go down a little bit when you find the curb. And the thing you do not want to do is to line your feet up with the curb, because most corners are very rounded. I have seen this happen over and over where students think they need to line up their heels or their toes with the shape of the corner of the curb. If you do that, you are going to diagonal cross the street. You're going to cross both streets at once. And generally you don't want to do that. I mean, there may be some situations where you do want to do that, but mostly you don't. So please don't line up your heels or your toes with the shape of the curb. If you're coming up to a really busy intersection, it may be that there isn't a real definite curb because there are curb cuts, or it maybe slants down for being a wheelchair ramp, and not really a ramp, but it just slopes down to the street. So there's not a specific curb. In that case, you would want to pay particular attention to the slope. Sometimes you can feel the slope going down to the street, and put that together with your auditory information of the cars. How close, you know, think to yourself, how close am I to the street in front of me? How close am I to this traffic? Where is the, you know, to determine where the corner is. And you don't have to be exactly on the corner. You could be back a little bit. Again, with busy street crossings, you're going to want to cross with that parallel traffic. And whenever you can, use your use your sun cues. If you got really turned around, the sun would be hitting you in a different spot than where you started from. So that would give you some indication of what's going on. I will say that for myself, when I was a beginning traveler, and for my students, there is a tendency when you're crossing a busy street to want to veer away from the traffic. I think it's an unconscious or subconscious response to a lot of traffic. And sometimes knowing that is just really helpful, knowing that that might happen, especially when you first start. If you've crossed and you've veered away from the traffic, let's say you've veered even 8 feet away from the traffic, from the corner that you're going to, you can listen and get yourself back on track and walk back to the street you want to walk along. That's very common, and don't beat yourself up about it if you do that. The important thing is that you are aware and know what's happening and know how to correct it for yourself. There are some other situations I want to talk about where you can be really in control. Winford and some of the other people who've commented talked a little bit about giving signals to the drivers. Let's say you're at an intersection and there's a car that's sitting there and it's waiting for you and you're really not ready to cross yet. You can wave them on. You give them a hand signal to go ahead and go, and they'll go. That puts you in control of what your own crossing and what you expect the car to do. So I've seen that work many, many times for people. Let me see about...
Well, one thing I'll comment on.
Yeah,
that.
Go ahead.
Yeah, sometimes we get, when my students are waiting to cross, and I'm working with them so that the street out in front where we are is not a really busy street, but
right.
There are occasions when the car is waiting and you don't want to sometimes cross out in front of them because the one behind them is impatient. And then,
exactly.
You know, so mm-hmm. What I do is I'll tell my students, I want you to take your finger, point, put your finger on your chest, point to yourself, shake your head no. If they don't move, keep your 1 foot planted, take a half a step back with 1 foot and do the same thing again. And then a lot of times that's when they'll get the picture. Oh, they're not going. Mm-hmm. And so then they will take off. And so, and I tell them the reason you don't want to cross, particularly we got our bus stops right there on the street. So, or the buses will come and stop. And it's like, you definitely don't want to go around that bus because you can't hear what's coming around it. So mm-hmm. we always recommend that they have those guys go.
Yeah, I think those are great tools. Using, you know, again, that puts you more in control of what's happening by
and
you.
And this is Liz, if I could just that. Add, similarly, sure. Don't always go when other pedestrians are going necessarily, travel for yourself. I've seen sight of people do really silly stuff like cross two lanes of traffic and then wait in the middle mm-hmm. of the street while the other lane's moving. And I would not recommend that.
I agree, Liz. Most many-sighted people are crazy when they're out there crossing intersections. And you don't, just because they say it's okay to cross doesn't mean they even know what they're talking about. They might not even be talking about the street that you want to cross. Exactly. They may be talking about the other street. You know, you're crossing your parallel traffic or whatever. So, good point.
Yeah.
So. I was also supposed to talk about, driveways? Did we already do that?
We did.
Okay.
I don't know if you did, but there may be people with questions.
Questions.
Yeah. Yeah. Let's have some. Do people have questions?
So if you do, raise your hand and we will recognize
you. Kelly Koppel has had her hand up for a while and so has Diane. Shelley was first.
Bet
so
their hands are blue.
Go ahead, Shelley. Hi, Shelley.
How are you? Hi.
Good. Hi.
Oh, it's like old times.
I know. Shelley and I've worked together for many years.
Awesome.
Great. Yes. I just love Duncan. It's always fun to hear you. just two things I was going to say in verification of your one is about the shorelining. One reason not to hug on to the edge of the sidewalks and stuff along the curbs is I'm short. And if you do and you're in a town like Littleton, I can picture some of the places Duncan's probably talking about. You would run into telephone poles, you would run into parking meters, you would run, and it would just sidetrack you so bad that you get very frustrated. So if you find yourself doing those things, you might want to just plant yourself, take a minute and sweep off to the right or left, whichever, and just kind of center yourself again, just for a minute, because that can really be unnerving. And the other thing I was thinking of is with the surge of traffic. Now, am I not correct that if you're following the pattern you were doing, you were walking north and the traffic was to your left, so a surge, the people wanting to turn right are going to pull over in the lane closest to you along that parallel traffic. So if you once you get used to what all that sounds like, you're going to want to focus on the cars on the inside more in the middle of that parallel traffic, because they're the ones going to surge straight ahead.
That's exactly right. And we hope that will be a much louder sound than the right-hand turners. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And and of course, remembering that they can do right-hand turns on a red, and that would be a really dangerous time to go. Yeah.
Right. Right.
Thanks, Shelley. I like that.
You
thank you.
Okay.
Diane. Can we unmute Diane? Or maybe I can. I don't know if I can.
And Diane,
you can unmute yourself too.
There she is.
I think I'm unmuted now.
Yeah, you are. Hi.
Hi, how are you? Duncan and I have known each other probably maybe longer than Shelley, and she and I have learned so much from her. It's just phenomenal. At any rate, what I was going to say, and I mentioned this before, but don't know if everybody was here, when you have some hearing loss, which most of the seniors I know and work with do have, you still want to be able to be as independent as ever. All you need to do is change a couple of your habits that you had. And I would say for me, I do more shore lining and I will wait longer to do a crossing. It doesn't hurt to stand there and wait. Nobody's going to, well, they honk at you. Just don't worry about it. Obviously, the car is way bigger than I am, so I need to pay attention. And they also need to pay attention to me. And they do. They do. I have had somebody one time say, that car is going to hit you. And I said, I doubt that, and just go on my way. Because anytime they see a blind person out, they think you're going to get hit anyway. So just, I learned a long time ago, don't listen to what everybody says. Listen to the people you know and the people that you know you can trust. When I moved here to this senior apartment, it didn't take them long to figure out. Now, I was always polite. I never think it pays to be insulting to people. Never. So I will just still say, well, one of my favorite questions was, do you know where you live? Well, yeah, I know where I live.
That's terrible.
Well, it is. It is. But we have that all our lives, people saying stupid things. But I just kindly say, yeah, I know. And it didn't take them long to learn that I do my way around here fairly well.
So, Diane, you know, one of the things that I've discovered, particularly when people are yelling directions at me from across the street, when that happens.
Oh, that yeah, that's not, terrible.
That, yes, but I'm not obligated to respond, especially.
That's right. Absolutely. The less you respond probably is better. Yeah. Because for one thing, if you respond, then you're not paying as much attention to what you're supposed to be doing. So
exactly.
Yeah, that's right. A very good point. So.
Yeah, and they may have their directions off. They may be telling you to go left, and they really mean right because they're looking
absolutely.
At you. And they're, yeah, again, remember, most sighted people out there walking around are pretty crazy, so don't pay attention to them.
Like it.
They're just directionally challenged.
Right. There you Pearl go. Has her hand raised.
Do we have other
yeah,
people?
Yeah, Pearl does.
Go ahead, Pearl.
Yes.
Hey, Pearl.
Hi.
Hi.
Shelly asked one question that I was listening to. The next question is, you're listening to the parallel traffic and you're crossing the street, what about that person that's in the parallel traffic want to turn left while you're crossing the street where the traffic has stopped?
Okay, so that's a really good question, Pearl. So that's why, especially if it's a new intersection that you haven't crossed before, you want to listen, because there may be a special left turn only light. You do not want to go across at that time. There, that traffic is going to be turning left in front of you. And oftentimes there is a light just for them. You need to listen to find out, is that at the beginning of the traffic light, at the end of the traffic light? Again, you want to listen for the surge of traffic going straight with your, that is your parallel traffic. Now, you're going to have also situations where there isn't a special light for that traffic to turn left. And they're going to want to turn left as soon as they can. Again, pay attention to your parallel traffic. They need to wait for you to get across at least that part of the street before they can turn left. Did that answer it? And if anybody else has more to say about that, I'd
be happy to. Yeah, that makes sense.
I think it sometimes it just takes practice.
It does. It does. It yeah. does take a lot of it takes practice, and right. just again, the surge as when you hear that car and you know it's going the same direction as you're moving with it.
Mm-hmm.
That's okay. That's the thing that blocks it.
Right. Right.
Okay. Patricia Thank Jenkins you. Has her hand
You're
raised.
Welcome.
Okay, Patricia Jenkins. Hi.
Hi. I am afraid to cross traffic when it's like I have parallel traffic and I have perpendicular traffic and it's like an intersection with two lanes or something like that or four lanes. I have a fear of that. And the reason why is because my parallel vision is gone and I have a guide dog, but then I want to use my stick. I try to use my stick to help me for traffic because I feel like that's my only things that I can depend on is my dog and my stick. But still, I have to listen for traffic. Now, it's very confusing because I can see some traffic and some traffic I can't see. So I'm wondering, how do I navigate the way I see things? Because I can't trust my eyes anymore.
Mm-hmm. Right. Okay, Patricia. So I have a few comments about that. So right now, it sounds to me like the remaining vision you have is not reliable and you need to not use your vision at all when you're at an intersection. Listen mm-hmm. for the traffic. I'll tell you that even the students that I have had who are wearing sleep shades in our program, sometimes they'll do a travel route and they'll come back and they'll say, oh, I got really, really turned around on that intersection. And after talking to them, I realized what they were doing was trying to visualize a picture in their mind of the intersection. I tell everybody, don't do that. Don't visualize. Try to get that out of your mind and listen only. And I think it will make a lot more sense to you.
Is it better to close my eyes?
If that's what will help you at this point is to close your eyes, it might be easier for you to close your eyes than it is for you to just try to not pay attention to that, because you're getting visual information, it sounds like, but yes. it's not helpful for you right
no,
now.
No, it's not.
Right. It's not helpful for you anymore.
You're right. Mm-hmm.
And one thing you can do to build up to it, Patricia, is walk up to the intersection maybe and close your eyes and see if you can listen to the traffic pattern and even say to yourself, okay, now I hear 8th going. Okay, now it's stopped. Oh, I hear Main going and it's traffic in front of me. And see if you can really pay attention to those changes in traffic. You don't even have to make the crossing if you don't want to. You can build up to it and build your confidence. But
this is Judy.
Yeah.
The other thing that you can do, first of all, we're assuming that you're using a white cane when she tells you not to do that. So you have
she
to have a
she
white.
She said she had a cane and
said,
a dog.
Okay.
Yeah.
Right. Oh, okay. But yeah, well, double coverage.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah. So, but the other thing is that if you have a friend or something who's going with you, don't take their arm, but say, let's stand at this. I want to see if I'm making the right decision. You tell me if I mm-hmm. chose correctly. Mm-hmm. You know, you could try that, but not let them take over just to make sure that you're verifying what you already know.
Another thing that I would recommend that you do. And I actually have a student right now that's kind of in that same situation. But one of the things that you could do is, again, go to that intersection and keep facing straight ahead and then taking your, let's say the parallel traffic on your left and it's going in the same direction you're going. Take your left hand and extend your hand, point your hand towards that car. And as you hear that car start to move, track that engine with your hand and follow it down the street. So now you're every time you track a car moving from surge to to it disappears. Now you're mentally saying, okay, as this car is moving, this is when I need to move. Okay. Now, what I tell my students is, if you take your hand and you put it palm up, like facing out, like you're saying stop, your middle finger is your nose, your index, and your ring finger are your eyes, thumb and pinky are your ears. So I make my students, I have them put their fingers flat like that. And when they track as wherever that tip of their fingers are pointing, I have them turn their head that direction. So you got a string attached from your middle finger to your nose. So when you turn your hand, you have to track that traffic with your face. So now you're getting your ears to follow the traffic where your eyes would be following. So you can practice that too.
That's a great suggestion. I haven't tried that, but that I like that.
Yeah.
Did that help, Patricia? Do you have any more? Okay, yeah, good.
That helped a lot. I will take those suggestions and I will practice. Thank you all.
Yeah. And the other thing is, don't forget your sun cues. I don't know where you live, but of course
I live in
Colorado.
South Carolina. And I will try that sun cue. I hadn't heard of that before, but yes, definitely.
Mm-hmm. I like to use it in a very simple way. If you feel the sun on your right side when you're starting the street crossing, you want to keep the sun there all the way through the street crossing. That's just one piece of information. The most important is going to be the traffic, but the sun can also help you, especially if you end up veering away from traffic. All of a sudden, the sun may be more like straight on your face, so you'll know that you kind of change direction. Like I talked about, people unconsciously veer away from traffic because they're, we're survivors, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Any other questions?
We're going to run out of time pretty soon, but we have time for one or two more if there is anyone.
Duncan, this is Jerry.
Hi, Jerry.
Hi. Well, one of the things I found, which is funny in a way, but truncated domes.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's a truncated dome at one intersection, and if you followed it, you'd cross diagonally.
Right.
They're not all facing the right side. So
Jerry, you want to define truncated dome?
Go ahead, Jerry.
No, I'm just saying that you can't rely yourself on, if you come to an intersection and you feel the bumps on the floor, they're not necessarily in the right direction that you want to go.
It's similar to, you don't want to line up with those bumps. They're like bumps. They're a texture that you would certainly be able to feel with your cane. You don't want to follow that as far as lining your feet up with it, just like you don't want to line your feet up with the curve of the curb on a corner. Mm-hmm. It's the same principle.
Yeah.
Duncan, this is Diane. I have a question. When I was working at the University of Colorado Medical Center, I had to cross Colorado twice a day, and mm-hmm. people would say, just go to the median and wait. I was never brave enough to do that. So what are your suggestions? How do you find the median if you want to do that?
Well, first of all, there isn't always a median in a really busy street. I mean, there was where you were.
That one. Yes.
So the median is going to be in a little bit from the crosswalk. So you'd have to go, let's say you had three lanes and then a median and three more lanes.
Mm-hmm.
You'd have to really pay attention to, okay, I've gone about three lanes and then use a really wide arc to find the median. The median should have a curb around it.
Okay.
I haven't really seen medians that don't have curbs.
Okay, Winford.
So what are your comments about it? I will just say quickly that when I was in training, there were times when I felt like I didn't have enough time to get all the way across and I would wait at the median, unnerving, yeah. Believe me, because you have all this traffic going in front of you and behind you and so on.
Mm-hmm.
But the one thing when it was Duncan was saying about find the button because hit that button and then go at least one cycle to see whether that button has kicked in. So when your cross traffic is moving is when you want to push it, because then it takes that computer to calculate to then add that time. So it adds a little bit more time, but the key thing is what I would tell my students is this. Know that you got to get across there and go a smidget faster because it's a calculated risk either way. If you are trying to find that median and you don't, now you're drifting down the cross traffic street. So make your break and just boogie on across there.
I hate to leave all of you in the middle of an intersection, but we've run out of time.
We're standing on the median, Judy. What are we gonna do?
Sorry. I want to thank you, Duncan and Winfred and everybody. And we can stop that recording if you would please.
Okay. Yeah. Thanks, Duncan.
Thank you.